The 2012 calendar ending has become a theme for us at our work in America, and we feel strongly that this calendar may or may not have direct meaning to us. And that even we've talked to some Mayan people who say that this whole interpretation of the Mayan calendar is wrong anyway. You know, that people are reading into it and making a big story out of it. And that really, people love end-of-the-world prophecies. You know, people really like that. It's like popular, you know, people really flock to it. And it gives them something to focus their attention on. But we all are aware that you can't both be serving the end of the world and the beginning of a new world at the same time. You know, you can't dig holes and bury cans of things in the woods and at the same time prepare a better world. So you're either planning for the end or you're planning for a new beginning. And that's something that we're really clear on. You know, the leaders of the world, the people who have always created and changed the world since the beginning of time, all history has shown us, they hold a picture in the future and they move towards that picture. So if the Mayan calendar really is ending 2012, well, then we already have another one that's going to be in place by 2012. In fact, we'll have it ready December 15th, 2011. And we'll celebrate the welcoming of a new way of living on the earth, which is really actually a very old way. It's a return to an older, more peaceful way of being.
Can you tell me more about your picture?
In the picture that I am seeing, you know, I'm playing right off of what my own eyes have shown me. All the little movements that have started around the world, these various groups that are concerned with world peace, hunger, indigenous rights, concern about the natural world, endangered species, women's rights, you know, on and on and on. You know, I think the author Paul Hawken has cataloged just so many of them. It takes 16 hours, 24 hours a day, 16 days, 24 hours a day to see all of the movements that he's now tracked. And he's not done finding them. He's saying it's the biggest movement in world history and no one's paying any attention to it at all. The main media is not looking at it. Nobody's looking at it because it's not organized. It doesn't have a head. It doesn't have an office. It's dispersed through millions of people worldwide right now, and all of those people share the same core values, which is equality for all, a loving, happy environment for all, and a nature that is healthy and vibrant for the future generations. And there's a deep understanding in this next generation that this is the only way it can be. And all of these relationships are being built across boundaries. You know, these old political boundaries don't mean anything anymore when the people make friends across these lines, like was said today in the closing circle, you know. Let us build more friendships between America and Europe so that there isn't really an America and a Europe. You know, those are just place names. You know, there's no division because we're all friends across these political boundaries, which have been superimposed on our landscape. And as has happened through all time and through all history, these superimposed boundaries move and shift. You know, there's nothing permanent about them. Only in the minds of the people who really believe in them at that time, you know, usually at the cost of human life, you know, that they believe in these things so much, which don't have any meaning to the children or to the animals and to the nature. You know, it's just stuff that people have created out of their political mind. And that stuff's always changing and always will change. So the picture I see is a strengthening of the core values that everybody has evolved to understand must transcend all of our differences. And I see it already happening. It's not something like I'm imagining a picture that's somehow a fantasy. I already see it happening. Mm. You know, a predicted future of times when the government in my country used to provide certain services but can't afford to anymore because it's too expensive. And as they let go of these things, there's citizen action groups that are coming forward just by the initiative of concerned people, and they're replacing the government and doing a better job, and they're more efficient and they're more effective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a microcosm of what it looks like. You know, we're throwing off an older pattern that's expensive, divisive, dangerous, prejudiced, dark, you know, hard to control, needing to control. You know, and moving more into what the open source movement is teaching us in computing. You know, that we can have an open source approach to life. So that's how I see it. You know, lots of different images of the same picture.
Yeah. These things, this is the basic of the new world.
Yeah.
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 And you said once everybody has to get an expert. What does it mean, this expression?
Well, in our current model, we hold quote-unquote experts up it's like treasure. You know, you take all the gold and you put it in a box and you keep it from everybody, and that increases its value. You know, so here what we're saying is that, you know, each person in the world is a treasure. Each person was born to bring a gift to the world. And right now we support certain people to rise in their treasure, and they become sort of these experts that we have to hire and pay a lot of money to get their information. But in the world that's coming, that's not happening anymore. It's already, the internet's already done that. It's already made it so that people can't, like record companies are suffering because they can no longer hold the intellectual property of another and sort of use that. It has to be dispersed and easy to share and open to more honor. You know, the honor system is taking its place. It's encouraging that instead of having rock stars, we can all be musicians. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of being experts on nature, we can all be connected to nature. You know, so it's like the dispersing of expertise back into the community, which is already happening by itself. The internet's already causing that. But the other side effect of that is that everyone can recognize, hey, I matter. I have a voice. I was born for a reason. There's some unspoken, unexpressed expertise within me that the people need. So it's more now about a gift economy where I carry a gift not for myself, but to share it for the people. You know, like the, and that's an old way of looking at things. It's not a new way, but it's a very old way of looking at things. We live for the village, and our skills belong to the village. It's just now that through communication, the village is global now. So, you know, people like me have to travel all over the globe to share our gift, you know, that that really belongs to the people that we bring it to. So I see that, you know, our move in society needs to be now towards helping every person realize their gift. Mm-hmm. And I think that if every person on the planet could right now realize their gift in that true way, we could solve all the world's problems within a week. Yeah. You know, because of the capital of intelligence that exists on this planet, and the goodwill and the heart and the love and the concern, everyone would take care of their own with an understanding that I trust the rest of the world, boom, into peace we go.
How can we help people to find that treasure in the next years?
That treasure is found through the eyes of others. Mm-hmm. If you ask an individual, what's your gift? They'll often tell you the opposite of what's true, because a person's gift tends to be that part of themselves where they're very self-critical, because they have such high standards around that gift that they never think they're doing it good enough. And so if you ask them, if you know, a really great artist, you can say to them, and their gift is truly art, you can see it, I can see it, but when you go to them and say, you're such a fine artist, they'll tell you, oh, no, I'm a terrible artist. No, these are silly pictures. You can have them. Take them out of the trash, you know. And I've seen so many people like that who, when they're in their gift, often don't even know they have a gift. In fact, they put themselves down within their gift very frequently. So you can't ask an individual, what's your gift? Because they'll never tell you the truth about it. And the community is really required to help reflect to them who they are and what their gift is. And so what we do in helping people find their gift is we get them to build relationships with many people in their life, you know, five or six coaches from different parts of their life, to keep reflecting back to them. This is the gift we see in you. These are your strengths. These are your weaknesses. These are the things that really help the people. You know, and I had to hear that many times before I finally surrendered. Because I have to tell you, sometimes when I'm in my gift and doing what is my gift, I'd rather be somewhere else doing something else. But I know that the people need it, and I know that it was given to me to serve the people, so I feel a deep commitment to the people and a deep honor to share it. So I always make the time and the place, and I always make the sacrifice of what I would rather be doing to share my gift. You know, for instance, sometimes I'd rather be playing music or maybe going surfing or enjoying time with my family, but people will say, we really need you to come over here to Austria to share this teaching because this is really important to our people here. When I hear that, I know I have to go. You know, it's not for me, it's for them. And I understand that. So my family has to let go of me for a few days, or maybe like in this case, they come with. But, you know, it's time to share your gift at times. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not something you would choose to do, you know.
And we all see that we destroy nature more and more. What's your recipe? What do you think, how we can change the behavior of the people in contact with nature? How can we go back to nature?
We have to help people remember that they really do love nature. Right now, nature exists as an idea in most people's minds in the world right now, especially if they have a modern urban experience where their life is about their TVs and their cell phones and their music and their buildings and their houses and their cars, and they don't have any direct connection to natural things. So they have now relegated nature to an idea, you know, that people do to get dirty, or it's, you know, something you do. I don't know. It's like nature doesn't really have a role to play in their life. More than half the population in America recently became urban by definition. And it concerns a lot of people deeply that when people have been urbanized, psychologically speaking, they lose their heartfelt connection with nature that much more. And so what really needs to start happening is there needs to be more opportunities and more ways of direct mentoring where people can remember that they actually enjoy being part of the experience of nature. You know, nature is not an idea. Nature is our mother, you know. The water feeds us and gives us life. The air feeds us and gives us breath. You know, the land feeds us and gives us food. And it cannot be reduced to an economic reality. And when it's only economics, people have shown that they are very irresponsible. Let somebody else take care of it. Let the people who get paid to take care of nature for us. Let the people who get paid to grow our food for us. We've proven utterly irresponsible in that cultural model. And that model has to change. People have to renew their direct relationship.
We see more and more children born on this earth. Kind of children, they have their own character. They say no and they mean no.
Yep.
And very, very strong, young, growing kids
yep.
coming now.
Yeah.
What does it mean for the new generation?
It tells me that the numbers of children that are like this, there's so many of them right now. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
It tells me that when they inherit the earth, they're going to change things. If we don't change it first, they're going to take it upon themselves and they're going to make the changes that our generation is afraid to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we don't have enough strength yet in our generation to make the changes that you and I both know need to be made. Maybe we don't have enough of a vision to see how to make it, but I can see that that generation does. And that shows me a lot of hope in the future.
Can you see a picture like me that this young people grow up, we teach them, and they got taught in a good family, they grow up with their values, with their treasures, and then all over the world they pop up.
Yep, I see it.
You see the same.
I totally see it.
Yeah.
We have to support that change.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one prophecy pattern that I see that I've grown up with since the age of 16, 17, which was a long time ago, I've been hearing these stories. And the ones that I really see that I feel so connected to are the ones that talk about a big change in the way that people live, a big change in the way that people think, in the way that they perceive themselves. As I said yesterday, in Koya Naskatsi, that concept from the Hopi tribe, a way of living that calls for another way of living. You know, that's what's reflecting back to us right now, that we are in the time where we're seeing that the way we've been for the last several hundred years as a dominant culture is not working, and it cannot work. And so when people fear the end of the world, I think all that they're seeing is the end of that world. It doesn't mean the end of nature, and it doesn't mean the end of the sun or the stars, or the way the water flows from the earth. It means the end of a way of life that doesn't work. There's beautiful things, gifts that we can bring from our Western experience. For instance, global communication and our ability to talk to each other all over the place all at once. You know, some amazing technologies that give us opportunities and abilities to make things happen much more quickly than we used to be able to. There's a lot of things we can celebrate about the modern life that we all cherish. But I think that what's also showing up is that this return to the understanding that we need the earth and we need to know that we're part of it. So what we're seeing is the return of the indigenous mind. It's what's coming back. You know, people are looking to say, well, we're not going to be bushmen walking around, you know, half naked with, you know, just barely some leather hanging over our parts. We're going to be bushmen in spirit, which means basically own our biological background. The biological truth about us as human beings is that for, you know, 100,000 years we've been in harmony with the earth, in our, and I don't mean like, you know, everything was perfect back then. That's not what I'm saying. You know, back in the day when the Indians were around, everything was great. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that biologically speaking, our body wants to remember its connection to nature. Our body wants to remember its connection to all things around us. And when it, and when we do remember those things, the spirit returns to us of deep concern and care for Mother Earth, for one another. And that's what I see coming back. And those are really, truly indigenous values, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what's returning. Mm-hmm. You know, the indigenous mind is coming back. And that's what many prophecies say, you know, that the Ant people are returning. They're going to arise from the ground, etc.